introverted noise.
Hurry up, Daddy.
Let's do it.
To the right, 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it
this.
To Mo Williams. Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
All right. We are back with another episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown. You can find me on Twitter at Brown Jason. And the streak is over. And it's crazy because we're right, you know, we're getting into the season. You figure we'd have the full crew locked and loaded, but we're recording on a Friday. Man, Miles had some things to do. Saxy Prince is doing what Saxy Prince does. He'll be here eventually, we think. So right now, getting things kicked off, it's me. And the man, the myth, the legend, the hardest working dude on Vikings Twitter, QB1. How you doing, my man? How's it going?
I'm good, man. Another day closer to game day. The NFL season is officially underway, and I'm excited.
Yeah, man. The NFL season, I guess it kicked off yesterday, which is, you know, we won't lie. That's the reason we didn't record on our normal night, because we were all very distracted and didn't feel like we'd be able to give you guys the attention, give this podcast the attention it deserved and all y'all the information that you crave, because we were all watching the game. So here we are recording on a Friday. I think it's the first time we've ever done this. And yeah, you know, Falcons, Eagles, they played sloppy game. Not the best product to get things started. And I guess viewers agreed because, you know, ratings were down again, even though, you know, most of that's people streaming, but whatever. But there are some things we need to talk about going on around the league. And the first one, JR, I really want to get your thoughts on, is this Le'Veon Bell situation? Because it got really ugly this week. And I'm not going to lie, I can really understand the perspectives of all parties involved here. And I'm curious to get your thoughts on really... First, Le'Veon Bell not reporting as he seemed to hint that he would do earlier in the offseason. And then, yeah, his teammates doing, well, I guess not all of his teammates, the offensive linemen doing something that you really never see players do, which is really get involved in a contract dispute and blast somebody over money. Like, players rarely count other guys' money, especially, well, sure, it happens in the locker room or quietly, but it's not something that gets blasted to the media the way that it did. And then his agent kind of coming out and hinting at the fact that, you know, Lev doesn't want to come to the Steelers and have them basically run him into the ground the season before he's looking to get a big payday in free agency. So, yeah, JR, I guess with all those pieces in there, what are your thoughts on this whole situation? And is anyone right? Like, yeah, where are you at with it all?
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree with you. I understand both sides of the equation and where all sides are really coming from. But I just thought the way that they handled it was really wrong, speaking from the offensive line standpoint. I just don't understand what they were trying to achieve by blasting him through the media, because now you've created a toxic environment, not only the relationship between the offensive line and Le'Veon Bell, those guys are actually blocking for Le'Veon Bell. So now it's going to be a situation where if somebody doesn't block for him, the fans are going to think, oh, it's over the whole contract situation. But then again, maybe it's not. They just maybe messed up on a play or something like that. But you're just creating all these variables with this situation when Le'Veon Bell told them from the start of his contract fiasco, his contract dispute, that he wasn't going to be there. Now, he did go back on his word because he did say that he was going to return around week one, which is something that he didn't do. And this holdout is already lasting longer than what he allegedly said. And even last year, he came in during week one. So I just think it's a toxic situation. And now it's created a toxic environment between that entire offense. And I seen a tweet that was actually pretty funny. And it was saying that these guys don't want to block for Le'Veon Bell, but they block for an alleged rapist in Big Ben. So I thought that was pretty funny. But anyway, I just think they've created such a toxic environment now because of how they went about this whole situation, creating that fiasco through the media. I just don't understand what they were trying to accomplish by doing that. And let's say Le'Veon does come back next week. Now you're going to have these chemistry issues, and how are they going to address this entire issue between Le'Veon Bell and this offensive line that came out and just slammed him through tweets, through the media, and I just think it was just a bad decision. And there's been some conspiracy theories out there saying that maybe management made them do this, and they were trying to – that was the only way they could press the issue with Le'Veon Bell, but let's say that is true. I just think that was the totally wrong approach, and I think it's going to come a point in time where they're going to have to end up trading him because I just don't see how they can bring him back into that locker room and get the chemistry better or how it was or once was. I just don't see a situation where that could happen. So I just think them having all these tweets and creating this whole dispute has just now created an even more toxic situation and environment.
Yeah, and the one piece of this that I really want to get your thoughts on, obviously you've spent a lot of time, you know, in and around locker rooms, the idea that his teammates aren't necessarily upset about him wanting to get paid. They're upset about the thought that he might, I guess, you know, from their perspective, quit on them for this season to preserve his body to get money from another team in the future. And I guess from your perspective, how something like that might play in a locker room. I know sometimes we talk about it in, you know, in college athletics, you know, people were saying that, you know, maybe Derwin James isn't going as hard as he could go because he's trying to preserve his body, you know, to get to the next level. You know, now everyone's in the pros, you know, everyone's professional. And from a business perspective, you can understand it. You know, I've, you know, said, and Miles kind of called me out about it on Twitter, where, you know, I would probably never pay a running back. I would get a running back, you know, as a rookie, run him to the ground like the Cowboys seem intent on doing with Zeke Elliott, and then draft his replacement, rinse and repeat forever. And it seems like Lev Bell and his agent are worried that that will be the plan for him if he was to report to the Steelers, that they would just wear him down and then no other team would want to pay him because he would have absorbed like 500 touches or something this year.
Yeah, and I mean, they're exactly right about that. No running back has more usage than what Lev Bell has had over the past 2 years. And we all know, I think he's about to be 26. So, and we all know those running backs really fall off the cliff at the age of 30. So let's say he has four more good years left. I mean, is a team going to want to pay him like Todd Gurley just got paid for four good years? And his agent is probably thinking like he wants to get paid right now. Yes, the franchise tender, I think, is right at $14.5 million, but he wants that long-term security considering how close he is to the age of 30 and just how many more prime years does Le'Veon Bell have left. And he wants to ensure that he gets paid for those next 4 or 5 years, prime years that he does have left. So I see where the standpoint his agent is coming from. Now, from a locker room situation, they're not mad at him wanting to get paid. They're mad at him for going back on his word, saying that he would come in during week one. And that's some of the stuff that he was texting and calling teammates about, saying that he was going to come in during Labor Day, which is when he was expected to report. And he did not report that Monday. And that's the biggest reason why they were upset. They're not upset that he's trying to get paid because they know he deserves to be the highest paid running back in the NFL. After seeing what Todd Gurley just got paid, they want him to get paid. They're just mad that he went back on his word, saying that he would come in and be there at week one to go to war with them this week during the season.
Well, you know, sometimes the universe just has perfect timing. We went in here, we got started without the man, the myth, the sexy prince. But of course, as we're talking running backs, here he is. He appears. He joins us. He pops in to the podcast. And of course, Prince, I got to get your thoughts on this because we're talking running backs. We're talking running backs getting paid. And I want to know, I guess, from your perspective, maybe let's say your perspective looking at this thing, how do you feel about how it's all played out? Where, A, you know, Le'Veon Bell said he would report. He's not going to report. Him being worried now that maybe having a full season of usage might affect his future value. I know that generally speaking, all of us are on the side of, you know, these players need to make as much money as they can for themselves because their, you know, careers are short. But from the perspective of, you know, a teammate, I guess, how do you see that dynamic? And do his teammates have a right to be upset with him going back on his word in maybe the short term to preserve his value for himself and not necessarily for them over the long term?
Yeah, I mean, I'm actually going to side with Le'Veon Bell, surprise, surprise, on this situation, because I think he is right. I don't like the fact that I think the reason why he was comfortable saying to his teammates, hey, you know, I'm going to be there week one, is maybe he did get some insurance from the Steelers organization that was like, okay, we'll get a deal done. Don't worry about all that cases. And when
but they can't this year, yeah, it's impossible for the Steelers to give him any more money.
And you know, when it became very, very clear that that wasn't going to happen, that's when he was just like, you know, I could do what DeMarco Murray did in, you know, 2015, 16 or whatever, and just play for the team. And then, you know, they end up just like letting you go and drafting your replacement or whatever. But I think he knew that that was probably what's going to happen. So JR kind of made the points is no, I want to get paid. And he knows he's not going to get that money. He knows he's not going to get the 15, 16, whatever million dollars he's trying to look for if he puts on another, you know, 500 plays on his legs. So I think he's making the right decision. I know that the offense line did come out and, you know, say what they were going to say, which is, like Jared said, I think it made it extremely awkward as far as, like, you know, I think there is quite a bit of relationship between the running backs and the offensive line, especially, you know, you remember 2012 when Adrian Peterson bought his entire offensive line, like those, was it snowmobiles or jet skis or something like that? But I think this is taking a turn for the worst. And I don't know if we could see Le'Veon Bell with the Steelers this year. But I'm on the side of him. He wants to make as much money as he feels he could. And David Johnson, some of these other running backs, they're not just running backs. They're obviously offensive weapons, and they deserve to get paid a little bit more. So then, you know, what we look at as the average running back, you know, the average running back should be able to do a lot of catching the ball, running the football, you know, between tackles, outside lines and stuff. But, you know, these guys they're even better at doing some of these things, which is why they require to get paid a little bit more so than, you know, what we see the average running back making.
Well, I'll go ahead and disagree with you on that. Side note, Lev Bell did come through with the diamond watches for his offensive lineman at Christmas last year. So, you know, I guess I'll let y'all decide if you want a snowmobile or so you got them the Hublot watches there. So you guys can have. I mean, it looks like he was treating them pretty well. Probably not going to be getting them a nice Christmas gift this year. I guess the other side of this that I'm interested in your perspectives on before, because we spent quite a bit of time on this, but it was something that I definitely wanted us to talk about, was what happens to Lev Bell's value if Connor comes out here and has a season similar to D'Angelo Williams a couple years back, where he is able to, in many ways, replicate Le'Veon Bell? Like, what happens if Lev Bell is shown, like, Lev Bell, super talented, does some things that, you know, most players can't do, but, you know, his patient running style is enabled by the fact that he gets good run blocking, etc. What happens to his value if Connor comes out and is able to approximate what he's able to do?
I do think that part of this is, you know, we oftentimes talk about how the running back doesn't matter because of the quarterback. And I think some of it will have to do with where Ben Roethlisberger is in, you know, a year or two, whatever the case is. If he's planning to retire after the season or even next season, that means they're probably going to bring in a younger quarterback, some guy that they are really grooming, or I think they already drafted one this past offseason, which probably means that, I mean, a lot of teams, they do like to have kind of that veteran presence at running back when you have some of those younger quarterbacks, the younger quarterbacks. So I think it'll be nice if, you know, Connor does do a really good job this season if Lev Bell isn't there. But I think his value shouldn't diminish that much, considering they're going to have some semblance of instability at the quarterback position. And to have a running back like Le'Veon Bell, who can be such a wide receiver weapon, I think would be really important for a young quarterback.
You know better than that, Prince. We've lived through that already. But I guess, JR, did you have any final thoughts on Lev Bell before we move this thing on?
Well, one who can actually catch the football. that's what I'm talking about. Not one who is very limited in his approach, if you will.
Just throw it to the slot receiver. It's worth more expected points. But anyway, JR, any final thoughts on Lev Bell before we end up on a running back argument podcast?
Yeah, I know everyone loves the Triple Bs, Antonio Brown, Big Ben, Lev Bell, but if James Conner comes out there and they have a true running back by committee rotation, and they won't get the same production as what Le'Veon gave them, but if they get 75% of the production that they did get from Le'Veon Bell out of a running back by committee approach, I think we will see the last of Le'Veon Bell in the Steelers uniform, because they can save that cap room, and it shows that somebody else or a plethora of, you know, a duo or trio of guys can get the job done similarly to what he did. I think we could see the last of him in the Steelers uniform, and I think they will look to trade him because they can't pay him, and they want to get something for him, and he'll have a host of teams that will be interested in him just because of the talent that he is.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, that's a good point. That's a good point, JR. I mean, I brought it up on a pod a couple months ago, but this is something important for the league that we oftentimes do see. You know, I think a lot of teams ideally would love to move towards a running back by committee approach. It's better for your team long term. You can keep a lot more backs healthy for, you know, a lot more for the season and in years to come. You obviously don't have to pay them nearly as much. But the problem is with some running back by committees is some running back by committees are not as good as like a David Johnson per se, or a, you know, a Le'Veon Bell, or maybe a Todd Gurley, whatever the case is. Like, not all of them are at their level of production is at the same level as some of these top flight guys. Now, like you said, if Connor can prove to improve that running back by committee, and that committee as a whole can give you the same production, then yeah, obviously you could see Le'Veon Bell's, for at least to the Steelers, diminish. But I still think that there's going to be a team or two who will still value Le'Veon Bell quite a bit.
All right, well, let's keep this thing moving along here. Trigger warning: if discussions of things that are in the news around the NFL get you overly worked up or upset, skip ahead a couple minutes, because, you know, we're going to talk about something that's been in the news dealing with the NFL that I know that some of you can get a little worked up about. But we're going to talk about it because it's news and we feel like it. It's our podcast. We can do that. Colin Kaepernick plus Nike plus the NFL. It's a strange, awkward situation that we have here. Kaepernick still suing the league. The motion the NFL brought to dismiss his case did not work. So the case is still going forward in his collusion case versus the NFL. And barely a week, maybe a week and a little bit after that news drops, we find out that Nike, who is a now 10-year partner of the NFL, has decided to make the same Colin Kaepernick the face of their new ad campaign. And not just any ad campaign, their ad campaign whose commercial they planned to premiere during the opening night of Thursday Night Football. Obviously people on both sides of this issue feel some kind of way, and we're not going to go and talk about this in great length because we have already. But JR, just, you know, quick thoughts on A, the situation in general, B, the hilariousness that broke out on social media afterwards, and just C, I guess, anything else you want to talk about as it relates to, Nike, Cap, the NFL, and kind of how you see this playing out going forward.
Yeah, I thought, y'all know I'm not a big politics guy. I don't know that much as far as both parties and all the hoopla that goes on with it, but I thought it was a big FU to the NFL from Nike, and I think it's something that they never even discussed with the NFL prior to making this decision with Colin Kaepernick to basically make him the poster boy of this whole entire ad campaign. But me personally, I actually enjoyed the commercial, and it was very inspiring as far as his message and what he was trying to get across. And I really enjoyed what he was trying to do and what he was trying to say in that commercial. And you know, politics aside, I think it was something that was very inspirational as far as the people that he actually included in the commercial as well. So As far as the 10-year deal between Nike and the NFL, is going to be interesting to see exactly what happens with that. They're already locked into that deal. So it's going to be – I'm going to be watching very closely to see how this relationship goes over the next few years and if there's some collusion that happens between the two parties, because it just seems like they're on completely different pages right now. And Nike basically, or what it seems like, did this whole entire ad campaign behind their back, especially with a guy that the NFL is really fighting at this current moment right now, Colin Kaepernick. So I just thought it was very interesting.
How many articles of clothing did you burn after watching the commercial, though?
None. My whole entire closet basically is Nike. I'm a huge Nike guy. I love Nike shoes and Nike apparel.
Okay, well, that must be hard for you day to day.
I didn't cut any socks either.
But there's so many good uses you can get if you cut your socks. There's so many great uses. Saxy Prince, my man, what are your thoughts on all of it? You know, Cap, Nike, the NFL, the backlash, all that. What were your thoughts on it all? And I guess from your perspective, how do you see it playing out going forward?
I said it on Twitter, but I absolutely love the finesse of Nike. I think that they played this brilliantly. And you know, they chose to take a stand that we're going to get some heat from, but they also protected their investment as well too. They waited until, you know, they kept paying Colin Kaepernick, but they waited until they were locked into a deal with the NFL, and really the only way for them to lose money at this point is, I don't even know. Because in order for the NFL to buy them out, I mean, Nike is probably going to require so much money that the NFL is probably unwilling to pay. So it's like it's going to be continued to side, you know, really all this year and for the next 9 years, to be perfectly honest. Again, so I just love the way that they outsmarted the NFL. And I think that's been happening over the last couple of years, because the NFL, you know, they have their viewpoints on things, and I personally think a lot of those viewpoints are outdated. I'm a politics guy. I understand that politics affect everything that we do, and I think it's, you know, if you want to escape politics, it's probably because certain politics don't often affect you day in and day out like they do certain other folks. So I think that the NFL is just going to have to swallow this pill. I think that they're going to try to fight that much harder, though, against Colin Kaepernick, you know, in court, just so that they don't have to deal with it nearly as much. But I think it's going to be more challenging the more people find themselves on, you know, Colin Kaepernick's Nike, really anyone who's supporting this movement that's been happening, that, you know, a lot of other NFL players have done in a lot of different forms. I don't get paid till next week, but I'll probably be investing in Nike as well. But
I know you didn't just say invest in some sneakers.
not sneakers, just like, I don't know, just like some gear.
You better hope your mama's not listening to this. You're about to get a phone call.
Go ahead.
No, I just think through beer. All this though, like it's marketing, and it's smart marketing from Nike, because, I mean, let's not pretend Nike is, you know, above the fray or some, you know, super woke company, generally speaking. I mean, most of the stuff that we get for anything is made in, you know, places that we choose not to think about, by people working in conditions we definitely don't want to think about. But Nike, when you actually go and start looking at some of the numbers, like, Nike's losing share. Like, they're still the biggest, obviously. But they're losing ground to some of the can't even call them upstarts, but some of the other shoe companies, like, you know, Adidas is, you know, marching up as Nike starts to slip. And this is a way to make Nike cool again. You know, like, Nike was the brand that people just wore because they've been wearing it. But a lot of the, you know, we'll say young, cooler stars across many different sports have chosen to go in a different direction. Like, LeBron James isn't old by any stretch, but he's old in terms of how long he's been in the league and, you know, what younger people are wearing or consider cool. And this is a way for Nike to get themselves right back in that conversation with a brilliant bit of marketing that already has online sales. I think I read today online sales since this ad dropped are up 31% for Nike. And yeah, I don't see it as anything like that. I don't see it as a political statement from Nike. I don't see it as Nike being, you know, a company that now all of a sudden is, you know, this great brand ambassador or anything like that. I think it's a way for Nike to make some more money. It's a way that, you know, I guess in a roundabout way, the NFL gets its, you know, name in the news even more. And yeah, everyone laughs their way to the bank on it. But like all the, you know, the Patriots out there burning all their gear, I'm sure they all bought jerseys, so Nike's still good. I guess maybe they'll cut the swoosh off the jersey. Start buying illegal jerseys from China or something. Who knows? I don't know. But I don't know. In the end, capitalism always wins. Nike's making this money. NFL's making this money. And there's really nothing we can do because we're not going to stop watching. But we're going to transition away from all the serious talk, locker room rifts, Nike, cap, politics, all that stuff. We're going to have a little fun real quick because, as you should know, we do have, you know, a new group that we're working here, Thrive Fantasy. And, you know, it's a different way to play daily fantasy. And it's a way that makes it, you know, I guess a more democratic way, a way that's more accessible to the masses to play, where you don't have to spend hours and hours and hours and hours poring over spreadsheets and figuring out who the wide receiver three is, who might step in if the wide receiver one is on the injury report and all of that kind of stuff. It makes it easy. Only the top players, simplified action, prop bets. And so what we're going to do just real quick here, it's not gambling. We aren't gambling. This is not a gambling show. We're not giving gambling advice. We're just going to do a quick game here. And I didn't put this on the show sheet because I didn't want them to be able to put, you know, a bunch of research into this, because that's the point. You don't have to do a bunch of research. So just real quick, we're going to run through a couple week one props. JR on one side, Yinka on the other. We're going to see where they go, see how this thing plays out after the week. So number one, JR, Kenyon Drake. Total yards this week, over or under 75.5.
Who are they playing this week?
They are playing the Titans.
Oh, slammed over.
Okay. Saxy Prince, over under. Saxy Prince, you still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. I'm actually going to go with the under.
Okay. So you're going with the under. All right. Next up, Saxy Prince, we'll keep it with you. Ezekiel Elliott. 91.5 rushing yards, over or under.
Who do they play?
Don't worry about all that, man. They're playing the Panthers.
I'll go under.
Okay. JR, how about you?
I'm going to go over. Thomas Davis is out, so I'm going to go over.
Okay. Keep this thing moving along here. Drew Brees, JR. Number of completions in the game, 22.5, over or under?
I'm going to go over. Alvin Kamara can't carry a huge workload like that, so they're going to involve him more in the passing game. I'm going to go over. Okay.
Saxy Prince?
I'm slamming the over.
Okay, so we're both on the over on this one. All right. Moving along here, Odell Beckham Jr. matching up against Jalen Ramsey. Number of receptions for Odell Beckham Jr., 5.5. Over or under, Saxy Prince?
You said reception. I'm going to take the over on this. Okay. If it was yards, it would be different.
Okay, so you're taking the over? JR, how about you, man?
Yeah, I'm going to take the over. Sherman's going to get it in his hand quick.
Okay. And that is it for week one. And it's really that easy. That's how we do it at Thrive. Only the top players, prop bets, way less math. So everyone can play and win, and not just, you know, the machine learning people like the good Dr. Eric Eager, who we love so much on this channel. All right. So we'll move it along. Thrive Fantasy, check them out. Link is in the show notes. If you sign up with our link, throw some money in the account, they will match you. helps you support the pod and can support your pockets as well. And I guess after this week, we'll see, you know, what if JR or Saxy Prince would have won themselves anything here if they'd actually submitted these bids here. So we've talked about a lot of stuff, but there's a game coming up. It's a Vikings game. It's something that, you know, we're all very excited about. We've waited a very long time through this offseason here. And so let's hop right into it. JR, you are our resident QB whisperer. And obviously, we spent a bunch of money on a quarterback this offseason. So I'm curious, man, what are your expectations for Kirk Cousins going into this game?
Well, this is going to be a very interesting game for Kirk Cousins because they're not facing a really great defense, and I think they're going to be able to have their way with the secondary. But the strength of the 49ers defense is their front seven. Reuben Foster is out. He's serving a suspension for his whole offseason fiasco. But they still have some very impressive pieces up front. DeForest Buckner is by far their best defensive lineman. He's a young player that I really respect, and he's on the ascension right now into stardom. And it's just a moment. If he has a really good year this year, I think he could be considered among some of the elite interior defenders in the entire NFL. Eric Armstead, he stayed hurt, but he's been a reliable piece when he is on the field. And Solomon Thomas, they're experimenting with him on the interior front, who was the first-round pick a few years ago. So I really like their interior defensive line, and we all know the weakness of the Vikings is their interior offensive line. So I think that's an area where they are going to target the Vikings. They're going to probably send some blitzes up the interior because the Vikings have been shuffling that interior front ever since Nick Easton and Elfline have been injured. So we could see them struggle up front in the interior a bit, and that worries me a little bit about Kirk Cousins because we all know when he's able to stay on schedule, he's among some of the best quarterbacks in the NFL. But when he's forced to throw off different platforms and he's forced to escape the pocket and create off script, he's a huge wild card. So their interior front does worry me a little bit. But if they're able to protect Kirk Cousins, I think he can have his way with the secondary. I like Akilah Witherspoon, who is a corner for the 49ers, but I just don't think he's there yet to compete consistently with Adam Thielen and Stephon Diggs. And we don't know what Richard Sherman is. Post-Achilles tear, and Stephon Diggs is the one wide receiver where Richard Sherman probably doesn't want to see. He's a short, shifty, quick wide receiver, and we all know that's been Richard Sherman's Achilles heel to this point. Those short, shiftier guys, he's more of a zone corner as opposed to a man corner, and coming off that type of injury, Stephon Diggs is really going to test that Achilles tear. So I'm really interested to see exactly how Kirk Cousins has his way with the secondary. But if there's one thing that really does scare me about this team, it is that interior defensive front, specifically DeForest Buckner.
And Prince, from your perspective, obviously, we know where you stand with the Kirk Cousins things overall, which is that you've been minding your business. But from your perspective, what do you need to see from Kirk Cousins for this to be a successful debut?
Yeah, I obviously want to see more than what we saw in the preseason. I think as far as preseason goes, it was pretty pedestrian, and I don't completely blame Kirk Cousins for that either. I think the interior offensive line was a huge issue, and I mean, they're still somewhat shuffling pieces right now on the interior. You have a new starting center. You haven't really had very much consistency at left guard and right guard, too. You've been shuffling guys around. Some guys are coming back. So I guess what I want to see from Kirk Cousins is just efficiency. Get Stephon Diggs the ball early and often. You know, maybe lean on Dalvin Cook and Tavius Murray if need be. But really, the efficiency on third down is really where I'm going to be paying a lot of attention to. That's actually something that, you know, the Vikings did pretty decent last season, last couple seasons as far as third down efficiency. But I'm really hoping that they can sustain drives a little bit longer. I don't think should be too much of an issue. Kirk Cousins get a little bit moved off. That's something that was really absent in the preseason, which I was a little bit surprised on. I mean, he's a pretty big target, so you are going to need him in that red zone area. I know Laquan Treadwell more so to kind of provide some aid in that area, but you do want to see Kirk be able to be tight end. So yeah, I I guess I want to see some efficiency early and sustain it throughout the course of the game.
Okay. Yeah, that makes some sense here. And then obviously, you know, Kirk Cousins, he's always going to be the story. He is the starting quarterback. He is the one who seems to have kicked off this new era of QB spending and contract structure and guaranteed money for players all across the league. But really the next thing, the matchup that I know that I'm interested in, and it's something that I tweeted about earlier in the week, is Zimmer versus Shanahan and kind of how we expect things to match up, how we think this whole thing will go. Because, you know, in their last, you know, four meetings, Eric Branch tweeted it out, Shanahan's QBs versus Mike Zimmer defenses, 9 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 280 yards per game, and a passer rating of basically 110. So I guess, JR, from your perspective, as you kind of look at this matchup, Zim versus Shanahan, what is it that Shanahan's been able to do to be so effective versus the Mike Zimmer defenses? And then conversely, I guess, what is it that Mike Zimmer and the defense need to do to shut down this 49ers offense? Because, you know, when Jimmy Garoppolo got in there last year, it turned into a whole different beast.
Yeah, and those stats were very interesting to me. And the first thing that comes to mind is actually the preseason game last year where he just lit up Mike Zimmer and walked him up and down the field all game long. But that was just a preseason game. But it still stuck out in my mind because that was really the last time that they really faced off. So I think the biggest key for the Vikings defense is that they have to get home with four. They have to get home with the four defensive linemen. If they're not able to do that, I think they could be in for a long day against Jimmy Garoppolo because he welcomes teams that blitz and pressure him because his release is so quick that it really doesn't affect him. And his accuracy is so good that those blitzes, whether they're in his face or if they don't get home at all, it really doesn't affect him. I think in the few games that he did start last year, down the back stretch, he was the best against pressure and blitzes. So that just goes to show you that Kyle Shanahan always has a great plan in place as far as hot reads and where he needs to go with the ball when anticipating those blitzes. So the biggest key for the Vikings is that their defensive line has to find a way to get pressure on him throughout the game because he can get a bit antsy back there. And the thing about Jimmy Garoppolo is that he can create off script and he can throw off those different platforms. But if you start to do it throughout the game, he can get a bit antsy back there. So that's the biggest thing with him. And if they do end up having to play man-to-man against these receivers, which I think they will come down and do, they will challenge them throughout the game. I think that could be a good thing for them. But the biggest thing that they have to do is they have to be able to somehow constantly create pressure on him with just those four guys up front. If they're able to do that, I think they'll be just fine.
Yeah, that's one of the funny things that you mentioned is how eerily similar the statistical profiles are of Jimmy Garoppolo and Kirk Cousins when you look at them, you know, from a clean pocket, which is obviously more predictive of, you know, how a quarterback is going to play from, you know, another clean pocket versus under pressure. Both Kirk Cousins and Jimmy Garoppolo go from, you know, elite level quarterback play to when you get some pressure on them. So yeah, I guess it'll be, you know, whoever's offensive line is able to hold up and do a better job will have a lot to say about where this game goes, which, you know, as a Vikings fan, with all the shuffling that's been going on in our offensive line, does make me a little nervous. But I guess you already kind of gave us that key there. So from your perspective, Jimmy Garoppolo, slowing him down, it's, you know, bully the receivers and, you know, pressure with the front four. Really anything else outside of that, you know, you would like to see the Vikings kind of focus on to shut down the offense and what you've seen from Jimmy Garoppolo?
Well, just make them one-dimensional. They have to find a way to stop the running game, which I think they'll be able to do now that Jerick McKinnon is out. They have Matt Breida and Alfred Morris. I think they should be able to slow down their running attack and make them one-dimensional, which is where those defensive ends can pin their ears back and just strictly become pass rushers, which I think is where one matchup that I will be paying close attention to, and that's Danielle Hunter versus Mike McGlinchey. I think Danielle Hunter has to make it a long day on Mike McGlinchey, and that pressure is going to be right in Jimmy Garoppolo's face. So if he's able to constantly create pressure in Garoppolo's face and move him off those spots against McGlinchey, I think the Vikings defense can have a lot of success. So Danielle Hunter really has to have a good day against Mike McGlinchey and basically have him a welcome to NFL moment and just have a big day against McGlinchey and take advantage of the rookie.
Saxy Prince, I know we don't have Miles here, so I'm gonna put you on the spot with this, you know, random wide receiver question here. But Marquise Goodwin is Jimmy Garoppolo's favorite target. Is he for real? And what are your thoughts on him matching up with a suddenly depleted Viking secondary?
Yeah, I know Miles was always talking about him. I watched some film on him, but he is legit, and I think it's something that it might become an issue. I think it's going to be more of an issue earlier on in the game. It really depends, you know, if he's gonna primarily be on the outside, you know, side him into the slot. He has some speed. He definitely has some speed. He can get in and out of his cuts pretty quick. So I think he's legit. Matchups are they are obviously across the board going to be quite a story here. I think if you match him against Trey Waynes, I think he actually would match up speed for speed for what they both are able to do. I think if you put him into the slot, we'll see if Mike Hughes. I didn't get to see the injury reports. Mike Hughes going to primarily play from the slot. Is Mac Alexander back?
He's doubtful.
He's doubtful. So it's looking like Hughes is going to get that start.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, Hughes is definitely going to have his work cut out for him if they start moving him into the slot. But I think I'm just excited to see how the Viking secondary is going to match up against Jimmy as a whole, but also just, you know, a guy like Goodwin. You know, he will probably get a few shots there, but you know, we'll see.
And JR, I guess from your perspective, Marquise Goodwin, like, is he for real? Is he like an actual wide receiver now? Because it seemed for a while like he was just a kind of one trick run deep type of guy, but you know, I was just looking at some stuff as we were, you know, preparing for the show, and you know, when Jimmy Garoppolo came in, he got all the targets, and you know, they extended him. Like, from what you've seen, is he actually a wide receiver now versus just being a track guy?
It's a little bit mixture of both. I think Jimmy Garoppolo really targeted him a bunch because he really was one of the few good receivers that he did have at the time, or good targets that he did have at the time. So he got a high volume of targets, especially in the intermediate areas. And that's one area where I was really surprised where he got most of his work at, because throughout his career, he's been mostly a deep threat or a deep nine route guy that takes the top off of defense. But he's really evolved his game as far as a route runner and exactly the areas where he does catch the ball. But he did a lot of his work in the intermediate areas, you know, on those dig routes over the middle, some deep outs and some deep posts, and of course those fly routes right down the field as well. So he has evolved his game, and it's going to be interesting to see exactly what they have him doing against the Vikings defense. I think he's primarily going to be taking the top off the defense, because I think Kyle Shanahan has a lot of respect for the Vikings secondary to send him on actual routes over the middle. And I think he's best served as a guy that can take the top off the defense, and they're going to take some shots down the field with him, especially against Trey Waynes, which I think is the guy that is going to be guarding him for most parts of the game.
Okay. All right. Saxy Prince, from your perspective, from what you've watched, what you've read, what you've studied, what are the keys to victory? What do the Vikings need to do to pull this thing out? I mean, they're favored. It's a home. I mean, they should win. I mean, most of the metrics say that, you know, the Vikings are a better team, better offensively, better defensively, better overall. Coaching, toss up, maybe. I don't know, based on some of what we've talked about already. But keys to victory, what do you want to see? What do we need to see in order for the Vikings to secure this week one win?
I know, I mean, myself included, I know there's been a lot of hype around Jimmy Garoppolo, just because of, you know, how he ended the season and stuff. But I mean, as you saw towards the end of the 2017 season, he did start to slow down a little bit. He came in really hot, but he slowed down a little bit more. So I think really making him uncomfortable, I think obviously some pretty unique blitz packages and coverages that, you know, Zimmer can do to disguise where guys are going and stuff, to just really make it challenging for Jimmy. Just because with Jerry McKinnon not being there as much, I don't think he's going to have someone to rely on a little bit more. So I think it is going to, like, Jimmy's going to feel as if he has to do a lot more, than probably than he needs to in order to win. You know, really going to take on that try to be the hero role. So I think if Zimmer can force him to the kind of into that corner to make him feel like he needs to do that, that's definitely going to slow their offense down quite a bit. I think offensively on the offensive side of the ball, it's like I said before, I think Kirk just needs to have, I just think he needs to have an okay day. I don't think he needs to be over the top. I just think he needs to just be efficient on third downs. If they get into the red zone, you know, he's kind of converting, you know, that 66% that you want him to. And not trying to do too much, because again, his first home game under the, you know, home crowd, all that stuff. So, you know, there will be some of that, you know, the nerves that I feel like might still be there. So basically on the both sides of the ball, it's really going to come down to quarterback play. You know, as cliche as it is, stop their quarterback and have our quarterback play better. So
look at Saxy Prince seeing the light, talking about QBs. JR, you got to be so happy from your perspective.
I need to take a drink or something.
Other than the QBs playing, you know, the team with the better QB likely winning the game, I guess. Anything else that you're looking at from a keys to victory perspective for the Vikings?
I think just making them one-dimensional on offense, if they're able to strictly force them to throw the ball, I think the Vikings defense will be fine. And then just starting fast, the passing game starting fast. I think the 49ers secondary is a bit weak, especially on the back end. We don't know where Richard Sherman is going to be post-Achilles tear. And I think the world of Akilah Weatherspoon, but I just don't think he's come on yet. He's still a young player who shows some great signs of being a really good player last year, but I just don't think he's there yet as far as competing and shutting down any of the Vikings' targets. So getting the passing game going early, and that'll help out the run game and open up things for the running game, Dalvin Cook, Latavius Murray, and then the defense making the 49ers' offense one-dimensional. I think those are the two biggest keys to the game.
All right. Well, it is time. JR, I need your bold prediction and your score prediction for this game.
So, score prediction, I'm going to go Vikings 24, 49ers 13. I think Mike Zimmer is going to come out and have a great game plan to limit Jimmy Garoppolo, and he's had some time to study Kyle Shanahan. He's got more film on Jimmy Garoppolo as a starter now, so which is good. So, I think it's going to be Vikings 24, 49ers 13, and I'm calling out Danielle Hunter. I want him to get 3 sacks, and I think he's going to get 3 sacks against Mike McGlinchey.
Boy, all right. Setting the pressure on Daniil, and I am good with it. Saxy, Prince, what you got for us here?
Yeah, I think this is going to be the day we've all waited for. It's the day that Laquon Treadwell gets his touchdown.
We're going to be right eventually, I guess.
Miles, is that you?
We can't just stop at one touchdown. He's going to get 2 touchdowns in this game, y'all. He's going to make up all the pass, all stuff that he couldn't do before. So Laquon Treadwell, 2 touchdowns to the tune of 23-13 Vikings.
Wow. Wow.
You guys are welcome.
Hey, if you're going to go, I mean, go bold. What was your score prediction again, Prince?
23-13. Yeah, Daniel Carlson will miss a field goal or something like
that. Oh, God, we can't have that. We can't have that. Yeah, even if we won, Vikings Twitter will burn itself to the ground. All right, let's see here. I'm gonna go, you know, with the Vikings victory, just because I think, looking at everything here, we are the better team. We should win this game, and I'm gonna go with Vikings 26, 49ers 20. And bold prediction. Stefon Diggs will start his wide receiver one, and not Vikings wide receiver one, but NFL wide receiver one season with a breakout game going for over 150 yards and at least two touchdowns.
We all know he comes out the gate every year fast.
At least two. Maybe three. But at least two. All right. And I feel like Yinka just stole Miles's bold prediction, and we'll just, you know, give Miles the same score as Prince. So we'll be good. We good. What else? Yeah, that's it. I think we covered everything we wanted to in terms of, you know, the game, the preview. I guess, you know, upcoming things, projects. So if you are not following Climbing the Pocket on Twitter, make sure you do that. Climb_the_pocket. And you can get caught up on, let's see. So recently we've had Sports Guy Rye drop his, players to avoid, players to target in week one article for fantasy football. Definitely make sure you're checking that out. 15 Minutes with Flip is back. 15-minute game preview for the 49ers game. Make sure you're checking that out. The one and only Saxy Prince linked up with the folks over at Good Morning Gjallarhorn. Great episode. Watched that earlier today. Excellent work. Of course, Saxy Prince filming the video for this. No different than when he's on with us. Saxy Prince in the car, it looked like, riding around filming his appearance on Good Morning Gjallarhorn. But it was good stuff from the Prince, as per always.
Y'all know I'll be driving Uber when I'm recording a podcast.
Yeah, so. Ubering it up out there on the video pod with David. So that was good times. Let's see what else we got. I think it's actually gonna happen, and Luke and Eric and I are gonna jump back on and record something tomorrow. New episode of Good Morning Gjallarhorn is actually gonna be dropping around the same time this podcast drops on Saturday morning. Saxy Prince, you were on the football machine this week, right?
Yeah, I'm almost always on the football machine.
Saxy Prince on football machine. Make sure I link to that in the show notes. JR, you were on with Andy, right?
Yes, I was on with Andy, and also Locked On 49ers with Brian Peacock.
Okay, so I will put those in the show notes as well. Miles was also on with Andy. I'll make sure you link, put that in the show notes. Check them out. The Climbing the Pocket gang, all over the place. You can find all of the wonderful insight that you can get from the people on this network all over the place. And that is it. That is all. Make sure you click that link in the show notes for Thrive. Deposit some money. Bless you. Bless you. Prince, was that you? You okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Okay. Yeah, deposit some funds. Make yourself some money. Support the pod. Maybe send Prince some antihistamines. I don't know. But that's it. That's all. That's all we got today. Listeners, thanks for sticking with us. Gentlemen, thank you for coming on and recording with me. And that's it. Have a good one, y'all. Talk to you soon.